What's up, everybody? This is Healing Intentions, and I'm your host, Dr. Adrian Mimetti. This podcast is about natural health and wellness, mental health, cannabis, psychedelics, philosophy, and spirituality. Today, my guest is Tyler Robinson. Tyler is a heart-led man who has a strong desire to create healing spaces in everyday situations. From a young boy in church to the man today sitting on his meditation cushion, Tyler's path has always been rooted in spirituality. He holds the belief that with an open mind and an open heart, anything is possible. An avid outdoorsman, burner, and yogi, while running a successful commercial real estate business in New Orleans, he embodies the practice of holding multiple truths at once. Most importantly, he holds love as the highest truth and aims to live and share from that place of truth at all times. Let's get started. All right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Healing Intentions. This is your host, Dr. Adrian Mimetti. And today I have a really special guest on, one of the many beautiful souls that I met at the recent Dr. Joe Dispenza retreat that I went to, Tyler Robinson. Welcome, Tyler.
Thank you, Dr. Adrian. I really appreciate you inviting me here. I'm so excited to share this space together.
Of course, of course. I've told so many people about the retreat, and just the whole thing was worth it just for the amazing, beautiful people that I met and the soul family that I encountered and, you know, got to connect with at the retreat and afterwards. So you're one of those many that I get to record this podcast with. So I appreciate you making the time and being here with me. So really, really excited to have you and talk about your experiences, your life, your background, kind of what brought you to this point today. But let's just start off with telling everybody a little bit about yourself, a little background, kind of what is it that you do and kind of what brought you to this point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally feel the same way, by the way. Like the retreat is a really beautiful experience, and it's a beautiful experience for many reasons, not just because of what you directly experience in the retreat, but the little beautiful conversations and introductions and connections are just like so much more than a cherry on top, but they feel like just a beautiful cherry on top. So I totally resonate with that. I'm coming to you today from New Orleans, Louisiana. It's about 80 degrees on this November 10th day. So happy about that. Fine with that. But I grew up in Louisiana in a small town called Lake Charles. And I grew up in a Southern Baptist church, which I'm really grateful for, because it tuned me in spiritually from a young age. And it's kind of formed the background or the baseline for a lot of the things I practice today, which don't really include that religious aspect. But I'm so grateful to have that background. And what I do for work is I work in commercial real estate here. I have a small brokerage and property management and development company called SVN Urban Properties. We started the company about 7 years ago, four of us. And that's been a beautiful unfolding journey as well. And it's kind of mirrored this other journey that I've gone on. And it's definitely added to it a lot of richness. And so, you know, it's funny, connections seem to be a theme for me. And really, that's my favorite part about a lot of things in life. And my business happens to be one of those things, because one of my job is to connect with people and to connect people. And I really find that enjoyable. And it's funny, because I was growing up, I was super shy, very shy. I had a lot of worthiness things to work through. And which is where I think that shyness kind of came from, aside from just some teaching about not being braggadocious and to be humble. And I sort of interpreted that in a different way. And so I've had to work through these things to sort of step into more of what I know is my worthiness.
Wow. Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you for sharing. So I'm just curious, what got you into the real estate world? Have you always been into that, or like how did you get to starting your own commercial real estate firm?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, my dad was a dentist and my mom sort of helped run the office. And so I didn't have a background in it. And I didn't really know that I was interested in it until I began to take Architecture 101 three separate times in university. I went to Yale, and at Yale you can they have what's called shopping the classes. And so the first 2 weeks at each semester, you kind of can sign up for whatever class you'd like, aside from the ones that you have to take. And so you can just kind of load it up and try some things on. And each time I thought, all right, I love design and architecture. Actually, being on campus with all of the different styles of beautiful buildings, ranging from modern and new to what you think of when you think of Yale's campus, the old school, beautiful cathedral style buildings. Kind of in awe. And I thought, like, this stuff is really beautiful. I've never noticed buildings like this. And be cool to somehow get into that. And architecture was very attractive to me as a vocation. And so I went in for the first time. I think I attended three classes during those 2 weeks. And it got into like the math and drawing part of architecture. And I was like, nope, I'm out. That's not my vibe. And so then the following semester, I was like, ah, I got to give it one more try. And so I did. And I think I went to one class and then I remembered then left. And then the third time, my sophomore year, I was kind of like the nail in the coffin for me as far as architecture was concerned. And so as time went on, I kind of realized, well, I don't have to be an architect, but maybe I can work with architects one day. And it took a long time, but I'm at that point now where I'm working directly with some great architects here in New Orleans, and it feels really cool to have completed the circle, but have only gotten to the starting point at the same time. So that's kind of the story of like what brought me into real estate. When I graduated from college, I started out as an appraiser, which it was an interesting role. It was fun and it was rewarding monetarily and also with time off. And so I resonated with it. It was also sort of the bottom of the totem pole a lot of times in terms of this industry. And I don't mean that hierarchical level, but it's just that there's basically two sides. There's the bank, and then there's the client or the developer. And at some point, they're all going to hate you. And so, while I really enjoyed that work and I did it for 8 years, I wanted to move. I wanted to kind of get on the other side of the desk. And so I went on the real estate sort of development brokerage route. And yeah, very, very fun and challenging work.
Have you always been on the commercial side, or did you start residential and transition to commercial, or how was that journey?
I've always worked with commercial properties. Although when I first moved to New Orleans, I sort of accidentally started flipping houses. I bought a house at auction, and I thought that my girlfriend and I at the time would get married and live in that house. And when I went to close on the house, the bank, everything was good to go with the loan. sitting at the closing table. My parents came in town to celebrate, so they're there at the closing table with me. And we finished signing almost everything, and no check showed up from the bank. And we called them, and we called them, and we called them. And I think by this, they closed, the title company closes at 5 o'clock. I think it was about 6 o'clock. The bank called us back, and we're like, "Oh, we can't do it. We can't do this deal." So I'm scrambling because I've never done this before. And so my parents were there, and they're like, "Look, we have some savings. We can make you a loan to close on this next week." And they did. And because of their involvement, I thought, we got to change the program here because I don't want them to be the bank. And I don't trust that bank anymore that just kind of left us in the night. And so I just said, all right, we got a pretty good deal on this. Let's clean it up and we'll just kind of sell it. And then we'll have washed our hands. We'll get most or all the money back and we'll move on. And then ended up that we made a little bit of money, and my parents were like, "Hey, what's up with that? Can we do that again?" And so we did. We did it a couple of times. And so that was my experience in the residential world, which I found to be super rewarding in that you can make a change so quickly. And you can take something that maybe a detractor on a street and really beautify the whole street in a matter of months just by making some changes to one piece of the street. And as I'm saying this now, I realize this applies in so many aspects of our life. We can make one small change quickly and it kind of beautifies the rest of our whole life. And then when we bring that out to the world, we start to beautify the world. So, in that same way, I love to bring these little allegories into my personal life, my work life, and walking down the street life. And I think that the work that you and I did at that retreat in Dallas, and that we continue to do on a daily basis, is very important to being that light.
Who thought that real estate could get so deep so quickly, right? That's amazing. Really cool. I love that. I love the allegories. I'm sure you're full of plenty more to come here. So that's amazing. And I just wanted to share a couple similarities w between you and I, because like I said before we started recording, we didn't get to connect and talk that much in Dallas, but I just knew, real recognized real. And I said, hey, I didn't talk to Tyler much, but he's got to be on this podcast and we have a lot to talk about. And same thing with me, dealt with the worthiness issues and being super shy as a kid, could barely look people in the eye. And, it's been quite a process and a journey. And I mean, even recently in my life, like making exponential shifts and, changes of to the point of at the retreat, there was this awesome DJ Beach Ball that was from LA that brought 70 headsets and did a silent disco for everybody on Thursday night. And I'm sitting there at the disco dancing in front of 70 people with my shirt off. That I never would have done something like that, totally sober too, by the way. I never would have done something like that even a few months ago. So just, noticing little things like that and just the progress that I've made is really amazing. And I guess the point is, if we can do it, then anybody can do it, So it is about that being that light and that example for others and that daily work that we do. So very much resonate with that. And then also I've done a lot of random different jobs in my life. I've been kind of all over the place with this and with that industry and with this, job and many different aspects of sales, the core skill set, I would say, that I've really developed is sales, professional sales in many different industries. But one of them, for a brief stint, was commercial real estate for office space leasing in downtown Chicago.
Oh,
Yeah.
wow.
Yeah. So I understand that small little aspect of the commercial game, and it's got to be interesting being involved in it at your level, because like you said, residentially it can be such a quick turnaround, but then the commercial game is a much longer time period, right? But the projects that you can work on and the things that you can do are, I mean, massive. I was quickly looking at your Instagram page, and like, you guys are involved in hotels and all types of different projects. So must be really, really cool, the different things that you've been able to create and be a part of and develop. So just talk about that a little bit more, if you don't mind, just like some cool projects that kind of stand out that you've been really proud of.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been very interesting for sure. And everybody kind of hates on real estate developers, and it's I totally get it. A lot of times we deserve it. Also, people like to hate on brokers too, and a lot of times we deserve it, right? And I don't mean you and me necessarily, although I'm sure we have and will earn that at some point. But yeah, I mean, what we do is we see the world just in a slightly different way, right? Where somebody sees a old dilapidated piece of junk building, I see like so much potential. And one of the projects that we're working on right now that we're just finishing up actually is just that. We came across this property near one of the main hospitals in New Orleans. It's like a 35-unit apartment building that this guy built in the 60s and just owned it forever. And I don't think he ever put a dime in it after he built it. And so by the time we came across it about a year ago, it was like hoarder's delight. And I mean, just like it was, should have been illegal that people were living there. It was just really, really in terrible shape. In fact, we had to do an environmental study on the building. It's just part of our lending process. And the EPA report had three active meth labs on the site.
Whoa, wow.
And so that kind of thing can be kind of scary, right? Not to mention that the, when you think about who lives in a building where there are active meth labs, it's, that can push people away.
Sure.
And so we're either dumb enough or brave enough to sort of go in and think that, this building's worthy to be restored back to its former glory. And so we've done that. We ended up buying it, and over the past 8 months, we've kind of redeveloped it, and it's now a beautiful, very livable and safe and secure apartment building. And we're actually working with the hospital that's nearby for them to have units reserved for their nursing staff and some traveling nurses and other staff who is either in and out or here for various periods of time. So it's been cool to sort of transform that, what was really sort of like a hangnail on the street, into something that now the hospital is looking at it for their people. And so, kind of a there's a feel good aspect to it, where I'm sure that we bugged the crap out of some neighbors with construction, but I think they're all pretty happy now.
Wow. That's amazing. That's really, really cool. I love that, and just the ripple effect. I mean, just You're doing your part of spreading that goodness and light to the block and to the healthcare workers that are there in that hospital, and then all the people that they affect on a daily basis through their what they do. And I mean, wow, that's really beautiful. So thank you for that.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's cool. Mainly we want to do right by the land here, and right by the people, and have fun doing it. And that's sort of my mission statement at work.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, I know you and Ramez have been to Burning Man, and that's something that I've yet to experience, but I definitely will be there 2023. And anybody that's been to Burning Man, I just instantly have a lot of respect for. So especially in the, older, by age category, whatever, 35 and above. And so, the veteran partiers, I guess we can call us. And so it's like no other experience on earth, I'm sure. But just the fact that you've been there and have experienced that, I think says a lot about you. It's not what you do or what you have, it's who you are, right? And I think that just who you are, I can already tell is a really special soul. So thank you for who you are.
Thank you, brother. Yeah, and I'll just say that Burning Man was kind of a dream for a while, and I was super grateful to actualize it with Ray and a couple of our other friends, and to be there together then with them was very special. But there are a lot of aspects of Burning Man that remind me of what we experienced at Dispenza, and really at the root of it. It's that in both of those two events, people are walking around with an open heart. And when I have an open heart, I'm going to be much more likely to say hi to you if our eyes happen to catch, right? Or you're doing something that looks interesting. I'm going to walk over and like see what's up. And I find that that's a parallel between both of those events, and it's just it's sort of like they're both peak experiences. And so when you're in those moments of those events, it's so easy and so natural and flowy to go and connect with people. Whereas if you had never gone to that event, it may not be. And so what those peak events do for me, and I carry this with me into them intentionally because I know it's going to be the case, like any peak event, I remember the feeling of what it was like when I go home. What was it like when that person caught my eye and I went and said hi to them and it led to this insane connection? And when I go outside, if I carry that remembering with me, it makes it so much easier to draw that experience to me or to like go intentionally and say hi to the person that's sitting by themselves or help the woman, the person crossing the street, the old lady or whatever. And to do it with a smile and with no expectation of having that revelatory experience, but just to do it because it's nice.
Totally, totally. And no coincidence, how many times did Joe through the retreat say, "Remember this feeling," right?
Yeah. I mean,
Cueing us.
that's the intention, I think, of he says that in a lot of his meditations, or remember the feeling, because during the meditation you're in sort of a like a mini peak experience. And if you're visiting that experience over and over again, and then he also asks you to review it afterwards, which is kind of like the remembering of the feeling, right? And I just think it's so brilliant that he knows that, and he's programming us to go back and remember it because it's so important. It's so easy to go to one of these events and just have the most beautiful experience and then go home and everything's stressful and you get sucked right back into your patterns. So I always tell people when they're considering something like this, or if they're considering psychedelics or all the things that we can consider these days that are along these lines of a peak experience that are transformational, I use quote transformational, is that the work starts when you get home or when you leave the experience. So it's like the most critical part, and most people are talking about that in all of those elements. But when you leave Burning Man, I mean you're out in the wild, right? And you may have left your open heart on the dance floor. You may have not.
I mean, peak experience is probably an understatement for Burning Man and for Joe Dispenza, I can speak for. But yeah, wow. So to follow the Dr. Joe Dispenza thread, what brought you to him and his work? What's your story with that, and how did you end up, and when was your first retreat with him?
Yeah, thank you for asking. My girlfriend had Becoming Supernatural, and she had read it. And I remember her reading it, and I was interested in it. But I never ended up picking it up. And then a couple of our friends who we're really close with, a couple, they came in town to visit in New Orleans about 2 years ago. And they were planning to go to one of the retreats. And so then I got started asking questions, and they're like, "Oh, we have some of the meditations. Would you like to do one?" And so we did the morning meditation. Actually, we did the evening meditation together because we were about to go to bed. And it was just delightful, especially with that crew. And then the next morning we did the morning meditation. And from that day onward, I just started doing that morning meditation almost daily. It wasn't daily practice at that point, but it was very consistently. And it just felt good. I didn't understand. He asked you to kind of put your awareness on the space in the center of your brain and the center, and your throat and stuff. And I didn't. I would just kind of like picture that part of my body in my mind and sort of visualize it. And it was great. I didn't know if I was doing it right or if I was doing it wrong, but then I understood that there is no right or wrong. And so I just would do it. And I just would sit usually in the morning sun for those 25, 30 minutes, however long that meditation is, and I would just do it and I would love it. And I would do it in a park right by a busy coffee shop. And so I'd always have people, they're like, "Hey man, what were you doing over there?" And I'd have the opportunity to be like, "Yeah, I'm just, this is my, I get to meditate in the morning in the sun, and here are the benefits of the meditation, and here are the benefits of the morning sun." And just kind of, who knows what little seeds were planted with me doing that. And so that was kind of my introduction to Dr. Joe. About a year after doing those meditations fairly consistently, Ramez and one of our other friends, Rudy, and my girlfriend Lauren, and I, and another friend, Kat, decided that we wanted to go to the Cancun retreat in January of this year, 2022. And so that was my first retreat. And man, it was amazing. The same beautiful souls that you and I met here in Dallas at this past one in October is the same like number and caliber and just beauty of the people that I met in Cancun. And Cancun's actually pretty interesting because because of the location, it attracts a little bit more of an international crowd. And so that was really cool. I met a guy from Austria. I met a bunch of people from Mexico, of course, and South America. And just really special to see the coming together that happens and how borders disappear and politics kind of disappears and we just all become humans together, kind of exploring ourselves and each other. And it's even more amplified when there's many different nations that come together because theoretically we should be different, right? Or according to society today, we should be different because there's a line drawn on a piece, on a map. It's nice to go and touch a space where the lines on the map don't matter, even if it's temporary.
Wow. Well said. What would you say were the differences? I mean, maybe it's not right to compare, but what would you th are the differences between your experiences in Cancun and in Dallas now in October? How would you compare and contrast?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be a contrast from experience to experience, right? And the most obvious thing is the beach, right? So at these Dispenza retreats, for those who have never been or aren't aware, you do a walking meditation a couple of times, two or three times. And in Dallas, we got to do it on this beautiful road that had a bridge. We were walking over a lake, and there were trees all around. It's insanely cool. Really nice to like open your eyes and like you're looking over this lake and the sun's rising. And just thinking about it and voicing it takes me back to the moments that I had there. It's really like my heart's really opening now. I can
Oh, yeah.
feel it. But in Cancun, you're doing that and you're on the beach. So it's just so nice. Your
Totally.
toes are in the sand, the water is kind of lapping on your feet, and the sun is rising over the most like cobalt blue water that you've ever seen. And then after the walking meditation, there's like breakfast and a little break. And so what do? Well, you skip breakfast and you get in the water, right? Float after this meditation, you're like kind of in a really kind of theta brainwave and calm and relaxed state. What's better than being in the ocean at that moment, man? Right? And so that's what we would just kind of be in the sun and in the water. And those themes were sort of throughout the week of Cancun. And I brought those themes into Dallas as well, just because I love the sun and I love the water. And so I'd go to the pool in Dallas, and sometimes we'd turn on some music and people would get a little movement going, and we'd be in the sun, and then there's the water. And so, from a higher level, it wasn't that different. But the contrast is there. I think Cancun had a few more people. I think Cancun draws a pretty large crowd. I think we were maybe 2,000 people, where Dallas was like 1,600. But this was also sort of, there was still COVID going on, and so there were maybe a little more restrictions on how many people they could have in Cancun. So, yeah, I don't know. I think the international ones may be a little bit larger in terms of population size.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. But they did say that the Dallas one was the biggest US event they had ever had. So that was pretty cool.
Oh wow, that's really cool.
Yeah,
I
I
missed that.
believe he said 1,800 people were there. So that's the biggest US event they've had to date.
Oh, great. All right, cool.
Yeah, so that was awesome.
History.
And yes, sir. Wow. So you mentioned in there a while back about peak experiences and psychedelics. I don't want to go too deep on that rabbit hole, but there's so many similarities between psychedelic experiences and meditation, right? They've even done, fMRI brain scans of long-term meditators' brains, people on psilocybin mushrooms, exact same parts of the brain are lit up, right? The default mode network. And that's the ego, right, of our brain. That's the structures in the brain. That's the ego and all the things there. And so, what are your experiences that you're open to sharing with psychedelics, with meditation, and how do you compare and contrast those? How do they fit together? What's been your journey and path with that?
I agree with you. I know the research on that, and it's really interesting. And I didn't even drink until I was in my mid-20s, and so I had done very much exploring of consciousness other than like sports, which is a way of exploring your consciousness because you really can push yourself. And so I didn't have these experiences that people talk about when they're in high school and college of where which is where you hear the most about. I had this terrible experience with psychedelics, didn't have that background, and I didn't have like a party experience with really anything until very late in my life. I'm 41 now, and so only in the past few years have I even opened my mind to the possibilities, including meditation. I've been meditating for maybe 5 years now, and practicing yoga for maybe 12. So my experience with meditation up until fairly recently was a 5 to 15 minute kind of just sit with my eyes closed thing, usually in the sun because I love the sun. And it was very rewarding, but it has changed a lot. And so I'll just kind of share one experience that informs my meditations now, because it was a pivotal experience. And I go back into that space quite a bit. And that was a ketamine therapy session with a local doc in town who and met at the retreat.
Oh, yeah, of course she'll be on the podcast as well, Dr. Mesa. Yeah.
Amazing. Dr. Mesa is just, I have such a big heart for her and Jeff and
Me
their
too.
daughter Jasmine.
Me too. Absolutely
Yeah,
amazing. Yeah.
really amazing people. And so, yeah, I got to do a ketamine therapy session in her office,
Awesome.
which was amazing because I felt so held and safe, held in her beautiful space that she creates, and very safe with the medical setting and the licensing and everything that goes with it, and the blood pressure taking and all the vitals, and those like kind of data points were such a nice complement to the loving and beautiful space that she creates. And your listeners will be blessed by that shortly.
Definitely. Yeah. We're recording next week sometime, so stay tuned.
Amazing. Cool. And my experience was really, really profound for me. We did a breath work beforehand, sort of a 30, 45 minute of the two-part breath, the belly, chest, and out, which I've had very deep experiences on the breath. And I put breath work right in the same category as another psychedelic.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've had some super really deep and psychedelic experiences with the breath. And so this was a combination of the two. And so we did the breath, and I had this powerful experience. And I realized as I was coming back into my body after the experience, after the breath, it took me a little while because I had gone deep and far into the nothingness. And as the breath work ended, I'm like, oh man, I gotta go to the bathroom. I was like, but I can't get up yet. Like I don't feel, I don't, my body's not that back yet. And so I'm kind of like, kind of start moving a little bit, and I open my eyes, and she's like, I'm laying on the ground, open my eyes and kind of look over, and she's like, you ready? So I'm
Amazing.
like, all right, let's go. And so I'm like, okay, yes, I'm ready. And and so she gave, it was an intramuscular in the arm, and so she gave me the dose, and I think it was 100 milligrams, and it came on, it was very quick. I could feel my body getting warm, and my lips started getting a little bit numb, and I was like, all right, here we go, here comes the experience. And my last thought as the medicine was coming on, it was, and pardon my French here, but it was, well, if I shit myself, I guess it'll be okay. That was sort of my last thought, was this surrender moment going into the medicine. And it turns out that that was kind of the theme of of that experience for me. And I'm looking back on it, I'm thinking that I created that theme by surrendering to to that possibility as I was going in. And as I look back on it, I'm like very grateful that I did need to go to the bathroom, and that that happened because it led me into, led me down the path of surrender, which I'm coming to understand on a daily basis. I get reminders of like the power and importance of surrender in many ways. And so I quickly went into what I can only describe as the void. I sort of melted down away from my body into the floor, into just this dense blackness. And I had this awareness that this is my existence now. I'm dead. And I could kind of like look around. I wasn't attached to my body, but my awareness could like look around, and everything was just black and dense, but it felt warm and I felt held. And so my thinking of I am dead was followed by, but that's okay. And then the immediate next thought was, or the next thing that came to me was, I'll feel for those who will miss me, followed by, but they'll be okay. And I just kind of bathed in that, like being okay with the situation. And it felt like this is where I was, and this is what I am now. And it, time ceased to exist, and I was just in this place, suspended. And suspended and surrendered. And it was this kind of, it was this thing for me that I revisit that place during meditations quite a bit. I just kind of, when the instruction comes to, go into the void or be nothing or become more of nothing, I really go to that space. And I've come to the understanding or the belief or the possibility that that space, that black nothingness, is touching sort of the quantum field. And that I did leave my body in that experience. And I was in this other place. My awareness was in this other place. And it's from that other place that we have the ability to surrender to new experiences and be open to new possibilities. And so after floating in this blackness for a little while, I became aware of, oh, I'm creating this experience. And then all of a sudden, as soon as that thought came, like patterns started to emerge, and I was kind of flying through patterns and like these sort of architectural patterny things that you hear other people recount in in their trip reports from a ketamine experience. And I was like, oh, I'm creating this. This is fun now, and it's kind of cruisy and beautiful. And I got to that place by surrendering. And so now when I do a cold plunge, I'm in the sauna and it's super hot. When I'm on a plane and very uncomfortable in the tiny seats and the babies, yeah, screaming and the kid in front of me is hitting the back of the seat, I just will close my eyes and I'll go to that place and I can go touch it again. And all of that, the cold, the hot, the noises, it kind of can melt away. And I tell Dr. Mesa this, every time I see her, I'm like, thank you again for that, for creating that experience and for providing that space that people can go to, because it's a very healing and transformative space. Especially with the preparation that she brings you through and the sort of the integration afterwards, which is critical. Again, the work starts after. And so I just thank her and give her a hug every time I see her for that experience. Among the many other reasons, I want to give her a hug, and that's always one.
Wow. Was that experience after Dallas or before?
Was before. It was just over a year ago.
Oh, wow. So even before you had ever even done a Joe Dispenza retreat. Wow. Okay. So then you were really primed and ready once he got those meditation retreats.
I was, and it was I was grateful to have that. Not that I needed it or it's a necessity, but for me, having that experience in my background just sort of continues to resonate for me. And I do just want to say that I'm firmly of the belief that psychedelics and even breath work are not for everyone. In fact, they can be dangerous for some folks. And so I feel the responsibility to say that. So if there are people, listeners who are considering, please talk to a doctor or take very small steps and understand the risks, because they're there and they're
Oh, yeah.
real. Just sort of the allure and all the press that this sort of segment of the world is, or the medical industry is getting. So important to be careful.
Definitely. It's very hip and sexy right now, the whole psychedelic thing. It's gaining a lot of mainstream, coverage, and it's all a good thing, but yeah, definitely not for everybody. Definitely need to be doing it. It's about your intention, going into it, and the preparation and the integration afterwards is the key. There's a lot of ketamine clinics out there where they just inject people and have their experience and go home and figure it out. And it's like, whoa, 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 that's not responsible, and just making those clinics a lot of money, but is it really helping people? I'm not so sure, and so the psychedelic therapy realm is exciting, but it reminds me of one of my favorite analogies of like meditation, yoga, breath work. All of these things are like walking up the mountain, and psychedelics are like a helicopter ride to the top. You get to experience what's possible, but then you always come back down. And then it's all about the integration and the daily work and how do you integrate that into your life. And so that's what I realized that Dr. Joe's, because I've been really into the idea of psychedelic assisted therapy, and I want to do that with patients and everything. And then I realized at the retreat, it's all about the integration. And what is the work and the daily work? It's meditation. I mean, it's so simple, but like one of my favorite Steve Jobs quotes, simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. The most simple things are sometimes the most powerful. Sun, heal, water fasting. How simple, just stop eating, and meditation and all of these things, and breathing. Who would have thought? I've heard many people say some of their most powerful psychedelic experiences are from breath alone. So it's really, really exciting times. Definitely. Another thing, that awesome boat party that we had after the event, that I was so grateful to be on that boat. Such a special, even further raising of the vibes after the retreat. It was like, wow. But I realized, me and Mesa, when we were talking there on the boat, that because of us, I think we're going to, this is a little teaser for our podcast that, with her, that we're going to help connect the psychedelic therapy groups and part of the world with the Dr. Joe meditation groups and bring them together. Because a lot of people get there by meditation alone, right? But sometimes people need just a little push, just a little reminder, you know? And it's not something like the pharmaceutical industry right now where take this and you have to take it every day for the rest of your life. It's not like that. Totally different. Sometimes you need it once, sometimes twice, three times, whatever it is. And you get the picture, you know, like Alan Watts says, once you get the message, you can hang up the phone, you know? And so I'm just super excited about all of it. And one of my passions is bringing the truth about all these different topics out to people through this podcast, through all the different things, and just letting them do with it what they like. But, you know, it's about education and empowerment of people to realize that they're their own self-healers. And that's what Dr. Joe's and his whole group is all about. So, what are your current spiritual practices, Tyler? Like, what do you currently do for your, you know, spiritual practice on a daily basis?
That's a great question. The thing that I do every day is meditate. And most of the time it's in the morning. Sometimes it's on the plane. Sometimes it's in a quiet, closed door office at work. And sometimes it's quietly in bed when I wake up. That's sort of my most consistent spiritual practice. And what that does for me is it leads into the next practice, which is loving myself. And in doing so, stepping into worthiness. And what that has led to is sort of a con it's all sort of a continuation of the meditation, right? Is that I bring that to work, and as best as I can, I put love onto my colleagues and employees and my clients. Whereas in the past, I may act a certain way because I felt like that's what was expected. Today, it's a radical authenticity. Because that's what I am. And I mean, we still play roles, right? But part of what I do is negotiate. And if I negotiate every aspect of something with just a totally open heart, I may not get the client where they want to be. And so sometimes you got to put on the costume a little bit and play the game. But in those moments where I'm having lunch with a client or touring or talking about stuff with my client, I found vulnerability to be a strength. And so part of my practice is to be able to be vulnerable around men, around women, around business people, around kids. At work, it's, at home and with family. And that was something that I really took home from Burning Man this year. This year is my first Burning Man experience, and I just realized that because hearts were open, people were vulnerable, and it made for this beauty. And so I decided that I just wanted to carry that home and sort of embody the vulnerability where it fits into sort of the everyday in the default world. And it's been nice. It's been nice to carry that. And so if I wasn't meditating, I probably wouldn't have picked up on that, because I've gone to more of an awareness for the subtleties of life and sort of the difference between being open and vulnerable and not. And so my spiritual practice is really sort of all the stem growing from the roots of meditation.
Beautiful. One of our mutual good friends, Emma, I told her I'm recording a podcast with you, and she said, have Tyler talk about being a mirror. That's a favorite topic of yours, or you know, way of being. So, and she sent me your Instagram post for Mardi Gras where you're at the mirror. So I love that a lot. I wish I could put a little visual up with that, with that. Maybe I will, and post editing, but talk about that a little bit.
That came up in a conversation. So part of what keeps showing up for me is these opportunities to hold space for others. And I have no licenses in any of this stuff, but I just have a license to love. And so I've had opportunities where people have felt vulnerable enough to share with me some things, and so I've gotten to share with them. And yeah, really, it just gives me an opportunity to be a mirror of love. Because really, like, when I'm looking at you through this screen right now, if you're sitting next to me looking at you in person, like, I'm just a reflection of you and you're just a reflection of me. And so this idea of the mirror is just to say, when I'm sharing something with someone and I'm coming from a loving place, like, I'm literally just holding up a mirror saying, hey, guess what? You love yourself, and it's okay. And it's okay to love yourself. And I love that practice. I love I love ha carrying the awareness of that, because then when I'm confronted with an energy that is challenging, I can remember that there's a mirror involved and that I have the ability to reflect back something other than the energy that's coming at me. And when I remember that, it's really nice. And sometimes it can have an effect on the situation where what was challenging ends up in this beautiful place, or at least a non-challenging place. And I've got to, I've been bl so blessed with having Emma in my life, and I've gotten to be a mirror for her. And it's just been such a joy and a blessing to hold that space with her, and with any of the other beautiful souls that have gotten to see their reflection in my mirror.
Definitely. Yeah, I got to really know Emma. We hung out quite a bit in Dallas after the retreat. And yeah, she's awesome. I'll actually be recording a podcast episode with her next week as well.
Yes.
So
Wow.
yeah, she's so funny. She put her name in my phone as Emma Dispenza's prodigy. Because she's, you know, aiming to get her PhD in neuroscience and you know, really go down that path deeply. And I'm super excited and happy for her, and really really a special soul for sure, like all of us. But yeah, really grateful that she's in my life as well. And she actually, I said, I'm interviewing Tyler. Emma, do you have any questions that you think I should ask him? So I wrote down a few questions, if you don't mind. So shout out Emma, and it's gonna come through her to me. So
Beautiful.
what are ways that you cope with daily challenges?
Wow. Thank you, Emma, for this lovely question. So it kind of goes back to what I do on a day-to-day basis with work, right? That abandoned, dilapidated building, right? That's a challenge. And if I can look at my challenges through the same lens that I look at when I have on my real estate developer broker hat, I can see that it's going to take a lot of work to turn this building into something that is habitable or can house a coffee shop or whatever. It creates a space for humans to connect in. If I can look at all my challenges like that, whereas I may screw something up and somebody may get mad about it. Well, it's such an opportunity to explore myself in that moment of like, okay, I screwed up here, and like I've given someone the opportunity to get upset. How do I want to respond here? Do I want to join the upset, or do I want to, own the error that was made and sort of help work through it? And there's many different examples of challenges, but there's sort of the bottom, the sort of the root of what I hope to carry into the world is, how can I help the challenge become an opportunity? Yeah, that feels complete.
Yeah, beautiful. I think I know the answer to this, but what helps you overcome yourself daily?
That phrase, overcoming myself, really got hit home for me. It like got sort of pounded into my brain. This guy that I sat next to several times in the Dallas event, every time I would talk to him, he'd be like, "Yeah, this I was having trouble in this meditation, or I was having trouble at work, and it just really gave me the opportunity to overcome myself. And like I was tired this morning, but it gave me the opportunity to overcome myself." And so it's thanks again, Emma. And so yeah, like if I get out of my own way, if I can overcome myself, and really what I understand that to mean is like my ego wants to take charge and like go back into my pattern because the pattern was already there and is easy, and the ski tracks were already deep, and we could just stay in that track. And it was familiar. Those tracks that I laid down of patterns and programs are very familiar to my brain and my body. To get out of those tracks, even a little bit, took a lot of work and takes a lot of continual work to overcome myself, my programs, my patterns. And the things that help me with that are meditation, breath work, and sort of like looking at the mirror of myself, and like literally looking at the mirror and realizing that my heart is beating for me right now, my lungs are breathing for me right now, my vascular system is like allowing blood to flow through me right now, and all of these things are what are creating this moment where I'm standing here looking at that happening. And it's just a little step back, and all of a sudden the me that was there a moment ago is overcome. But it's continual.
I like to say, we feed our body every day, right? It only makes sense that we need to feed our mind and our soul every day as well. It's an everyday process. It's not like, oh, I ate once, I'm good. I meditated once, I'm good. It's like every day, every day. That's why Dr. Joe's work is like start your day like that. And once you're in that elevated, emotion and with the clear intention, it's like, how do you think your day is going to go? A
Yeah,
lot better.
absolutely.
So a couple more, and then I know you have a meeting to get to, so I want to be respectful of your time, but what inspires you?
There's so many, I mean, there's so many people I'd like to think. So, the sun shining on my skin inspires me. People doing big things inspire me. Like Dr. Joe getting on the stage and talking for hours on end without even taking a sip of water or a breath is like, what's going on here, man? People that are willing to overcome themselves and start a podcast inspire me. People that continue to show up for themselves. That's a big thing. That's a big thing. People that are willing to reach out for help inspire me. One of the things I did at Burning Man was I volunteered for Zendo Project.
Oh yeah, I did the Zendo Project training.
And so I got to do the training, and one of the things that stood out to me at on the playa at Zendo was that people were there and reaching out for help. They knew like there's this place I can go and they'll take care of me. And it's okay. And it's still challenging to do there with all of the open hearts. And I know how much more challenging it is in the default world to reach out and ask for help, because it's something that we're taught not to do, that we need to toughen up and, deal with our shit. And, we've just been fed that lie. And so people that ask for help really, really inspire me.
Wow. Well said. I agree 100% with all of that. Wow. So what does the future look like for Tyler Robinson and company? What do you envision when you envision that future in your meditations? What does that look like for you with real estate, with personal life, like with just with everything? Emma mentioned something about you starting a new business as well. Little teaser for that.
So I like doing a bunch of different things. And that's pulled me in the direction of, I've accidentally got myself involved with a natural wine bar that's coming to NOLA. And not necessarily by accident, but just kind of it manifested itself, and I showed up for it. And so I'm really excited for that. We have our soft opening next month, and so I'm super pumped for that. I really wine has been one of my favorite things to explore, and only recently did I learn that there was this whole group of growers out there that are doing sort of méthode naturelle or natural winemaking, where usually it means organic grapes and very minimal, if any, intervention with the grapes when they're gone to ferment and then to store. No chips or flavor additives or any like preservatives like you see in the sort of the industrial, agriculturally grown wine. And the product is this living thing in the bottle. And so you'll have two bottles of the same from the same producer, the same grapes, and they may taste differently because they're living and they've taken on these lives of their own. And so it's been something I've been exploring for a few years now, and just really so happy to be going a little deeper in. And my partners there are like so incredible, and I'm so grateful for them. And so there will be a space to share wine in my future that is called the Tell Me Bar in New Orleans. Will be officially open sort of early next year, but soft opening all through December. So really excited to share that with the world. And on the real estate side of things, yeah, just kind of interested to see what's going to happen in this marketplace. I think that we're going to see a little bit market turmoil, so I'm excited to explore that and to find ways to help my colleagues and employees really thrive in a time that might be a little bit challenging, and to be able to help folks who are challenged in this next time. And I just want to shine the mirror and get it brighter. Part of what that mirror costume at Mardi Gras was for me is it was a figuring out that part of what I want to be for others is like a loving confrontation. And sometimes the mirror is confrontational, right? I may not like my hair today, right? And so I throw a hat or whatever. I may not like, the way the shirt looks on, so I change. And live my Mardi Gras costume was a literal manifestation of that, where I put on a bunch of sparkly stuff and literally had a mirror on the front and the back. And on the front it said, "The love you seek is here." And it was like a circle for the people's face that were looking at it. And on the back it said, "Look how beautiful you are." And it was a fun costume, and it was also like I had people crying and people thanking me, and it was like a reminder of like, okay, this is your space. This is the space you're meant to create. And so to wear that costume, even when it's not physically on me, is sort of like, that's my future.
Amazing. I love all of that. And funny about wine, you mentioned, I don't know if you caught how many times Dr. Joe mentioned wine and how much he loves wine. I mean, it was funny. That guy is a comedian, first of all. He's a stand-up comedian, whether he realizes it or not, but he freaking loves wine. So I'm sure he would love to have some of your wine from the Tell Me Bar. No doubt. And I never resonated with alcohol the same, but for me, the equivalent would be cannabis. I have a very special relationship with that plant. And I didn't touch it till I was 26 years old. So similar in your story of like, I wasn't young and partying and I barely drank that much, you know? And then I discovered cannabis and I was like, whoa, we've been lied to about this plant. It's so amazing. It's been used as a powerful healing plant all around the world for thousands of years. So I'm one of the biggest activists and passionate, people that you can ever meet about cannabis. Because once you understand your body's endocannabinoid system and it's how it's literally the conductor of the orchestra of your entire body and hits all of your physiological systems, it's kind of hard not to be excited about it, So that's where I resonate more, but I love whatever it is that, brings people to that place. And it's so many similarities in wine and cannabis too, right? I mean, of course. Yeah, I just wanted to mention that because it's pretty funny how much Dr. Joe talked about how much he loved wine.
Yeah, man, it's wild. Lauren, my girlfriend, every time we're talking about Dr. Joe, she's like, "Oh, we got to send him a case of natural wine from Tell Me Bar." I'm like, "All right, yeah, we do. We will."
I'm sure he'll love to receive that.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Awesome. This has been an absolute pleasure, Tyler. I feel like we could go on for hours and hours, but anything that you want to leave everybody with, any kind of parting thoughts or what you'd like to share from your heart, from your mind right now?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I'd like to share is that I love you. And that's to you, Dr. Adrian, and that's to everyone that happens to hear this. And you are worthy of that love. And as I say that to myself also. And for those out there who feel like some help would help, just ask. The people around you also love you and would love nothing more than to come and help you. And so just as much as it may be fearful or may incite fear to ask for help, just do it. The people around you love you.
I love you too so much. And thank you again for who you are. You're just so amazing inside and out. And really can't wait till we hang out at the next Joe Dispenza retreat or at Burning Man or at all of the above.
Yeah, brother. Likewise, I can't wait. Thank you so much for the space.
Thank you. We'll talk soon.
Psst.